Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ah, yeah, so some devotees had proposed to ask some questions to me, and I proposed that I put them in writing. Whoops. Put them in writing, and I could address them. Oh, they're already here. Yeah. Okay. Any more? Yeah, yeah. This is nice. Okay. Just a couple of things. Those which are in languages other than English could be given to. The famous someone who will translate them. Well, you can translate. But wait a minute. You can. You're more experienced in translation. We are from Croatian and then other languages, Czech, if there happen to be, or whatever other languages may be here. But first, before that, from the internet, I was asked to speak on two things. One thing was about how a speaker on Krishna consciousness, the mood, disposition, deportment, more or less making this. Sometimes people ask questions and the answer's already there in the question. And what it really is, they want me to speak about something that they want to say. So the point being made that speakers should generally be grave, not so much flashy and showy. Of course, at the present time, to catch viewers in the competitive YouTube speakers world, if you can speak in a very attractive style and make lots of gestures, and jokes help a lot also, you will tend to get more followers. But it's not only in the YouTube era. Even previously, there were various famous speakers. I'm talking about in Indian culture, who are more, some are very famous as speakers, just like kirtaniyas, some are more attractive than others. Usually those who are more attractive are more showy. That's generally what we see. But the real method to present topics of the Absolute Truth, which are very grave, is in a grave manner. I didn't say topics of Krishna, because as I was saying in relation to the verse that we discussed this morning, it's not that Srila Prabhupada or even the Shastra and the commentators, they don't necessarily always speak directly about Krishna. The verse that we read this morning and the purport did not speak about Krishna. They spoke about the Absolute Truth. And we find Srila Prabhupada's opening words in his Bhagavatam commentary. If we take the preface, the opening words, the, The conception of God and the conception of the Absolute Truth are not on the same level. The Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the Absolute Truth. What does that mean? There is a general conception of God, and there is a general conception of the Absolute Truth. So what does the Bhagavatam hit on the target of? Srila Prabhupada uses this terminology. We might think that it's God, but no, it's not. It's the Absolute Truth. Why is that? Because Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Brahma Sutras, which begin with Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now we should inquire into the nature of the Absolute Truth. Srila Prabhupada translated Brahman as Absolute Truth, which is a term in English for Western, English. In the English language, to describe the philosophical concept of the Absolute Truth, the ultimate reality. We're using capital letters at the beginning of the words here. Absolute with an A, and or simply Truth with a capital T. In English, if you write Truth with a capital T, it has a specific meaning different to Truth with a lowercase t, unless it's at the beginning of a sentence. Just like, for instance, lamb. You all know what a lamb is. It's what many of us who were not born to Vaishnava parents used to eat on Sundays sometimes. Sweet little animals jumping around in fields prior to landing up on a plate. But if you write the word lamb with a capital L, what does that mean? Does that come in your language? The lamb. Anyone? Christians? Ex-Christians? It refers to? Jesus. To Jesus. He's the shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. He's also considered the lamb. So, Truth with a capital T, that is the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who are approaching reality in a philosophical way. In other words, the Srimad Bhagavatam, one implication of this statement of Srila Prabhupada is that the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not to be seen primarily as a religious book. You read the Bible and you have to believe it, because it's the Bible, the Gospel. Again, we're using capital letters here, capital B. What does Bible mean? What's the etymology? It means book, book. No, that's another one with a capital W. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. That's pretty mystical, isn't it? Srila Prabhupada quoted that once in a lecture. Capital W, the Word. What's he talking about? What does it mean? The conception of God tends to be sentimental. The conception of the Absolute Truth is studied by Muninam, Muninam Amalatmanam, philosophers in Vedic philosophical, Vedic philosophy. One has to have qualifications before one can be a philosopher. One has to be amalatmanam, one has to be a sadhu, one has to follow some principle. It's not like in the Western world, where often the philosophy is to justify hedonism. which is another philosophical school, if you like. Epicureanism, which is another philosophical school, which is not one of full sense indulgence, as is often misunderstood. So it's a philosophical approach to understand. That's the point being made. It's a philosophical approach. And to understand philosophy, although probably in modern classrooms, they try to lighten it up with jokes. But inherently, it's a very grave subject. Is philosophy taught in universities in this part of the world? Anyone know? It is. You still have philosophy courses. Very much. Did I hear that? Very much. All universities have philosophy department. I'm surprised to hear that. So it's hard work. It requires brain power, and we're talking about very deep subjects, very grave subjects. What is the nature of reality? What is the nature of reality? Ontology, ethics, what should we do? What should we not do? What is right? What is not right? So these are very grave subjects. Srila Prabhupada, in his speaking, adopted a philosophical approach, or not adopted, but just naturally. What is to be expected from a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? So a very philosophical approach. And he expected his disciples to perpetuate that. Now for preaching, we may adopt different approaches. That's a fact. We may do all kinds of things for preaching. But we tend to attract we tend to attract people according to the style of our preaching. If we preach in a light-hearted way, then we're not likely to get very serious people. We speak very seriously, and we'll tend to attract people who are more serious. Serious people tend to be less in number. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yati siddhiya. You read my mind. You could say what I was going to say before I said it. Kaschid yati siddhiya. Hardly anyone's interested. And Krishna's speaking in a time of philosophers. Krishna's speaking at a time where there are munis wandering all over the place. Well, not on every street corner. Well, there weren't any street corners at Kurukshetra. But there are plenty of munis in Vedic culture. Rishis, sadhus. They're quite common. So, still, not that many. And it's not that every rishi is a spiritualist. We have the Purvimimamsa, the Jaimini, he's a rishi, but he's promoting materialism. We have Charvak Muni, he's also a Muni, philosopher. He's promoting materialism. Jaimini promotes Vedic materialism. Charvak promotes atheistic, out-and-out materialism. So hardly anyone's interested in understanding the Absolute Truth. But that is who we should try to attract first and foremost. And others we may try to attract also. It's just like, in one sense, there's no harm to have a lighter approach and attract many people at a certain level. But really the topics of Bhagavatam, they need to be, Bhagavatam being non-different from Krishna, should need to be approached in a respectful way. Not to be taken cheaply. Another thing I was asked to speak about, curiously, I don't think any of you would guess this. If I give you a guess, all a guess, you wouldn't. It's something to do with marriage. And even if I give that clue, you probably wouldn't guess it. Now you're all very curious as to what it might be. Someone who is in an interracial marriage and has asked me not to recommend it. Because he says it's difficult culturally, two different kinds of cultures. And for the children there may be an identity problem. So he's experiencing that with his children. It's nothing specific to Krishna consciousness, but I suppose it was a devotee who asked me to speak about that. So I thought about it a little bit, and what I thought was that, as far as I can see, white Westerner devotees marrying Indians, it didn't seem to be that. There seemed to be the marriages that I know of are fairly good. Oh, several of my godbrothers married Indian godsisters or godnieces, and they're in their old age together still. Maybe we're talking about white marrying black in America. Well, there are plenty of such unions. That's why you see the blacks in America. They're not all black, black, black. Many of them are brown. Something not fully black, because a white woman can give birth to a black child, but a black woman can't give birth to a white child. So if you put white and black together, you get something in between. Talking about the color of the body here. And it, I don't know, the same may cause some cultural divide or identity crisis or whatever. I guess this devotee is experiencing that. But we have in Atlanta one of our devotees. He's a grandson of Dvibhuja Prabhu, who's a Prabhupada disciple, whose wife is Mexican, Latino, and Abhimanyu Sutta, his grandchild, he's black. I don't see he's disorientated because of that. So it may be, in some case. But anyway, I don't think it applies to anyone here. And marriages can be problematic for many other reasons. I suppose if you don't add another one. But anyway, I was asked to speak about it. I don't know if I satisfied the person who asked me to speak about it, but anyway, whatever little I know about it, I spoke about it. Okay. Hare Krishna. We endure a bad situation for a long time. For example, constant humiliation. Oh, so another marriage one. For example, constant humiliation and disagreement in the husband, wife, or father-daughter relationship, to the point that it degrades us because we are not always spiritually strong. It disturbs us and affects our sadhana. How should we act properly? Alternative, and then there's a number one. There's no number two. Maybe it's somewhere in there. to suffer a bad situation in terms of accepting one's own karma and staying in that relationship until Krishna changes something, or we ourselves leave that relationship. To suffer a bad situation in terms of accepting one's own karma. Well, that's recommended, isn't it? What's the verse? This verse should be the guide of all devotees, Srila Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion. What is that verse? Tatenu kampan su samikshamano punjana evatma kritang vipakam ridvagvapu bhir vidadhan namaste jivata yo muktipade sadaya bhak. Stick it out. That's the summary of that verse. Thinking, yep, I really don't like my wife, or husband, or father, or daughter, or whatever, but I guess I must have been in the other situation in the previous life, and I was doing the same. Now I'm getting it back. So if I try to respond again, then again the next life I'm going to be on the other side, and it's going to go on like a ping-pong game until we break the circuit. We break the circuit by tolerating, thinking, I must have done something to deserve this. And at the same time going on serving Krishna with mind, body and words, and then go back to Godhead. And then you break the circuit. That's what's stated in that verse. Now, here it said to suffer a bad situation, stay in that relationship until Krishna changes something, or we ourselves leave that relationship. This is a short-term vision. The idea that something has to change in this life. Not seeing that we are in a life which doesn't last very long. It will end soon. That's why the philosophical approach, I was just talking about that, seeing philosophically that we are just here for a short time and we have to do the best we can in whatever situation we have. Any changes that we may make should be done according to dharma. According to dharma, it is possible to walk out of a family situation under certain circumstances. The most common one, which also isn't very common, is to retire from family life having discharged one's duties and to accept renunciation in the latter part of life. That's the most common way. I'm talking about in Vedic culture. That's what one is supposed to do. As I was asked. It's not always done. I know some instances of where it of how it has been done. I know one couple who used to verbally fight with each other a lot, and possibly maybe there was even some physical violence in the relationship also. But they stuck it out because they thought it's the right thing to do. And after some time, they just thought, well, we're going to stay together, so why fight? Just, and they cooled down, and they got on well with each other. Another couple I know, they told me that they were having so much disagreement in their marriage, and they went to see an astrologer, who looked at their charts and said, "Who recommended you two to get married together? Which astrologer was that? You're not suited for each other at all." But they're married. And they remain married. And same thing. They adjusted like that. If you think, well, I'm in it. So we're both in it. So we'll both stay in it. It used to be that here in Croatia, for instance, as in pretty much all the Western world, which was never spiritually advanced, which never had a strong religious culture, but not a strong dharmic culture. There was no concept of dharma as the phone's off, please. Please see your phone, check, see if it's off. If not, please put it off. Strong religious culture used to be there. And people were eating meat, drinking, so many things. But people had some idea. There was a sense of morality and duty. And people used to get married and stay married, right? Now we're more advanced. So anyway, you ask me, and if you ask someone else, they might give you different advice, but as you ask me, that's the answer. What is the benefit of not having electricity on Hare Krishna farms? The benefit is that you don't have computers, smartphones, news. You take rest earlier because when it's dark, which is here now, we're just past the equinox, so the latest it gets dark in Croatia throughout the year is about 9 o'clock, right? It's about 9:20, yeah. The summer equinox. We just passed that. In India, depending which part of the country you're in, because there's only one time zone from way over in the east, Manipur to Dwarka in the west, it's the same time zone. Actually, they need at least two time zones. But it doesn't get dark very late. 6:30, like that, p.m. And there's no daylight savings time or whatever. So naturally, a short time after it gets dark, then you want to take rest. And naturally, you take rest, and it's peaceful because you don't have TVs blaring from anyone's house. And then naturally, you rise early in the morning. It's very good for spiritual life. That's it in brief. Don't believe me? Go and check it out. Devotees are happy without all those things. Another thing, the benefit of not having electricity, you don't have to pay for it. And if you pay for it, you have to produce more than you need to pay for it. You have to do something to get money to pay for it. And then the simple living becomes less simple. And simple living is gone. And when you have electricity, then there's no end to the kind of electric devices you can possibly buy and use. Look at all this stuff. If I gave an unlimited budget to Hrishikesh, there wouldn't be any room here for all the different things. There's no end to the things. You can use it in Krishna's service, but as far as the farms are concerned, we don't want to get into all that. There are different things for different. This is yukta vairagya, and that's just vairagya, that's all. Yukta vairagya means using things in Krishna's service without being attached to them. Anasaktasya vishayan yatahamupayunjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagya mucchate. Seeing the relationship with Krishna, use it not for personal enjoyment but for Krishna's service. And not having electricity means that you don't have to bother with it at all, because having electrical items means always problematic. Things are always breaking down and you always have to upgrade them. And just I got a new computer temporarily, and then there's so many things you have to plug in, and you have to plug in this and plug in that, and you have to look at this part and that part, and just to get started, it's a whole big thing. And then they're always going wrong, and so save yourself a lot of headache, and just don't bother about it. And then you have to keep up with all the latest gadgets, because it's not enough to have just any old iPhone. You have to have the latest. And whenever a new one comes out, people are camping out in the shops one day before so they can be the first with the latest model of the new iPhone. Just don't bother. Don't believe me? Go visit. We have an electricity farm just 8 hours drive from here. You can go and see. Devotees are happy because Krishna consciousness makes us happy, and not having electricity, it helps to make an atmosphere that is conducive for Krishna consciousness. If you don't have Krishna consciousness and you don't have electricity, there's no particular benefit to it. But if we want to be Krishna conscious, living as simply as possible is beneficial. It has its advantages. It was recommended by Srila Prabhupada. Is Srila Prabhupada the most amazing person you have ever seen, unless you have seen Krishna? How did it feel to be close to Srila Prabhupada? Can you say something about Srila Prabhupada, please? Yes, I'll say something. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The most amazing person I've ever seen. Well, as we're always, all of us are always reading Srila Prabhupada's books, following his instructions, thinking about what he wanted, it might not seem amazing, because amazing comes when there's something new, unexpected. That's the adbhuta rasa, which is the underlying, the sense of yas chamatkara bharabhu. The rasa is that which is heavy with chamatkar, with something amazing, astonishing. So in Krishna Leela, everything always seems very fresh and new. And that produces a sense of wonder. And particularly Shyamasundara Prabhu, the first of the, I think, three, Sri Prabhupada initiated three disciples with the name Shyamasundara. So the first one who wrote that series of books, Rhinos, what is it? Hunting Rhinos with the Swami? Chasing Rhinos with the Swami. So he emphasizes that point again and again and again, that with Srila Prabhupada it was always amazing, because when you went in his room, you never knew what he was going to say, what he was going to do. It was always coming up with new plans, and even if you say something to him and you expect him, if you're expecting an answer, almost guarantee he won't give the answer that you expect. He'll give something which you just don't expect at all. But I didn't see that, because I didn't have that close personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada. But we see the effects of what Srila Prabhupada gave us, the amazing thing that even today, in this degraded world, people are taking up Krishna consciousness. That's amazing. People buy Srila Prabhupada's books. That's amazing. On the streets of America, people are buying sets of Srimad Bhagavatams. People have never heard of Bhagavatam, never heard of Krishna. And not everyone, but some people, they have some interest. And so we see amazing things all the time. Srila Prabhupada introduced us to the amazing world of Krishna consciousness. And it's amazing that you're all here, and I'm here, and we've stuck it out throughout life. That's pretty amazing. What does it feel to be close to Srila Prabhupada? I don't know. If you ask a frog what it's like to be a frog, well, first of all, he wouldn't be able to understand, but what does it feel to be? It's just like you ask, we ask someone from Bangladesh, what is it like to be? What does it feel like to be a Bangladeshi? We didn't know anything else, right? So it's hard to say. So I can just look and see what would it be like not to be in this. Not to be in Krishna consciousness. It's horrible to think of. We may think that, well, there's too much all that. Enough. Enough is enough. One of my godbrothers, 1980s, he said, well, I think I've done enough Krishna consciousness for this life. And when he lived in Mayapur for years, then he came to Bangladesh for a short time, said, well, I think I've done enough Krishna consciousness for this lifetime, and went back to New York City and never heard of since. But I don't know, the thought of doing anything else is just frightening. People may say that's the effect of a cult. You become so much involved in a cult that you can't imagine doing anything else. Yeah. I'm a cult victim. Although I guess people who don't like cults would say I'm one of the exploiters, right? Because I'm a guru. And gurus, they exploit. They make people work hard for them when they do nothing. And they just enjoy. That's what they say. Can I say something about Srila Prabhupada? Well, especially in these formal situations, everything we're saying is, if not about Srila Prabhupada, it's all coming from him. I may not speak his name every 2 minutes, but whatever we speak, it's what we've learned from him. Or even if he gives some anecdote or analogy from experience, it's all presented in the light of what we've learned from him. I have books you can read. Jai Srila Prabhupada, My Memories of Srila Prabhupada. Have we ever been in Goloka Vrindavan? We. Have we ever been? As far as I understand from Srila Prabhupada, we have been. That is disputed. But as you ask me, that's what I understand. How to become humble. Put that on the side. Who asked the question? Who asked? Humble. There's a hand. Is that hand there? What are you not humble about? What are you proud of? If we think, if the opposite of humility is pride, so if we analyze, what am I proud of? If we analyze, it doesn't make any sense. Well, I guess some people could be proud of some things. Jeff Bezos could be proud of being the richest man in the world. It's hard to be proud when you have, hard not to be proud when you have Janmaishvarya Shruta Shri. These are the four things which lead to, which seem to naturally lead to pride. Birth in an aristocratic family, wealth, intelligence and education, and bodily beauty. So anyone who has any one of these things, and they often go together because karma is like that. So if you have these things, there may be a tendency to be proud. But it's all foolishness because it's all temporary, and it's an accretion on our ego. Doesn't really belong to us. We don't have, and even if Jeff Bezos, he's so rich, but he's nothing compared to Indra. We may have a disagreeable personality so that we have the tendency to quarrel with others, to be easily annoyed, micro-sensitive. By Krishna consciousness, we should understand, I'm simply meant to be the servant of the servant of the servant. So by understanding and practice, we can become humble. We can do humble service. That may help us. There's plenty of kitchen cleaning, floor cleaning, vegetable cutting. How can we recognize our spiritual teacher, Diksha Guru? Well, in Shastra, the spiritual teacher is differentiated from the Diksha Guru. Shiksha Guru is the one who gives instruction, and Diksha Guru is the one who gives mantras. And they're not necessarily the same person. Although Srila Prabhupada writes that one who continuously teaches someone in the beginning, they generally become the Diksha Guru, but they're not necessarily the same. In traditional families, there would be traditional families of those who gave initiation, but they wouldn't necessarily be the ones who traditionally teach. Often the functions may be different. Recognize our spiritual teacher, who we take instruction from. Spiritual teacher means they have to teach according to Shastra. They have to teach. Shastra is the center. Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. They have to behave according to that. There are guidelines so that we can understand. There are guidelines if you want to buy anything. On the internet you can look and see. You want to buy something and you'll find there are reviews of different products. If you found it useful or whether it works well or whether it lives up to its claims. In America, they have a system whereby the students rate the professors. to see how good they are. And it makes it really tough for the professors. Must be really, really tough for them. So they have to satisfy the senses of the students. But then you can find out if someone's a good teacher or not. See the quality of the pupils. The qualities of a teacher, they're given in spiritual teacher. Achinoti, yashastrani. Achare, stapiatyapi, swayam acharate, yasmad, acharyastena kirtitaha. One who has collected, or one who has collected the achinoti, the conclusions of the shastra, in other words, someone who's himself studied, that means he studied under an acharya and understood the conclusions, who follows those conclusions and tries to impart those to others and personally lives according to that, that person should be seen as an acharya. What is the secret of Sankirtan? What's your secret? That question is on two levels. What is the secret of your life? And you can also say, what is the secret of book distribution? Because I've been doing it for more than 20 years now.
Work hard, samadhi later.
Work hard, samadhi later. Sankirtan Das says that the secret of Sankirtan is work hard, samadhi later. There could be several answers to this question. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasadaha. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of the Gurus, we can distribute these books. We also find Ekaki Ama Nahi Paibol Harinama Sankirtane Tumi Kripa Kori Shraddha Bindudya Deho Krishna Nama Dhane. Sankirtan in the sense of chanting the holy names of Krishna, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I have no strength to do on my own, so praying for the mercy to do so. So praying for mercy. Every long-time book distributor, or even short-time book distributor, knows that as soon as you think, I'm doing well, and I'm doing it, then you don't do anything. You have to pray every day. One secret Srila Prabhupada was asked, he said, chant all your rounds in the morning. When he was asked once. And when you're going out to distribute books, you really have to pray. And it's a prayerful mood, isn't it? You meet people and you talk with them. But inside you're praying for them to take the books. For further discussion of this subject, you can attend Sankirtan festivals. I guess they don't have them in Croatia much because there's not much book distribution going on, unfortunately, these days. We just had a Sankirtan festival in Atlanta, United States, and we invited Bhrigupati Prabhu, who's been distributing books daily, at least 6 days a week, if not 7 days a week. For about 50 years now. He's over 70 and still enthusiastic every day to go out and distribute books. And he's still one of the world's top, usually in the top one, two or three among book distributors in the world. A living legend. If our movement gave the proper importance to book distribution as it should, he should be lauded as the most. You're talking about seeing amazing Prabhupada. Well, what about amazing? We have some pretty amazing devotees. So he came. So we're having Sankirtan festivals at least once a year. Get a ticket to Atlanta. Or you can ask him. Or go and spend some time with him. You like to. Or you can, with Sankirtan Prabhu, he's also years and years going out doing lots of books, simultaneously managing projects, training up devotees. There are different devotees who are preaching. Not everyone's going to be on the level of Ramanuja Acharya. But yathaditam yathamatihi. According to what we've learned, according to our realization, and according to our ability, we can all preach. One thing I said when I was talking at that Sankirtan festival, we see the scores of the big, big district, Bhrigupati, Mahotsaha, these are the big names. But then if you take the efforts of all the many, how do you say it, little, or those who distribute lesser, if you put them all together, between them they distribute more than the few at the top. So we need squirrels as well as monkeys, to use the example from building the bridge to Lanka. We need many foot soldiers as well as the people in the war who get a medal for bravery, they're great war heroes. But we need many others also. We need many foot soldiers. And every foot soldier has, how many is it? 10 people behind them? Every soldier. It varies according to the army and situation. But in the army, you have one man holding his gun. Man, notice. I didn't hear any feminists screaming, "Why aren't they sending the women to fight in Ukraine?" Where is the feminist protest? So for one man on the front lines with a gun, behind him you've got cooks and cleaners, maintenance men, engineers, doctors, administrators, drivers, a whole bunch of people too behind them. So everyone has a role to play. Everyone can do their bit. Faith, of course. I didn't say that. That's a given. Without faith, you can't do it. Sense of mission. The faith that these books, that people really need these books. These books are the brainwash books. Srila Prabhupada one time called them brainwash books. Because that was 76, 77. There were court cases. There were kidnappings of devotees. There was a major court case against devotees in New York. And it was claimed, a major court case was all over the news in America. It was claimed that the Hare Krishna cult members are brainwashing people. So Prabhupada said, yeah, this is a lot of opportunity for distributing books, all the bad publicity. So people are thinking about it. So he said, so we should fight back. We should fight by distributing more books. He said, these are our brainwash books. These books will brainwash you. Prabhupada accepted that charge of brainwashing. Your brain needs washing because it's full of stool. He accepted that. Another way he took it is, We're not brainwashing, we're brain giving. You have no brain to wash. You have no brain to wash. So he said, now is the time. He was eager. He loved it. So distribute books. That sense of that faith that we have a mission to change the world with these books. What can we do when we lose enthusiasm about the process? Associate with those who are enthusiastic. For instance, by reading Srila Prabhupada's books. He's full of enthusiasm. His books radiate enthusiasm. If we've lost enthusiasm about the process, well, we haven't fully lost it because we haven't lost hope. If we'd lost hope, we wouldn't be asking the question. So we can apply ourselves to it. If we apply ourselves to the process, then naturally enthusiasm comes. Kirtan, yeah, that should naturally lift up our spirits. Enthusiasm is required in Krishna consciousness, but the process itself gives us enthusiasm. Any quality which we want to imbibe, it's most useful to do so by associating with those who have that quality. So same thing. What is the secret of Sankirtan? Associate with devotees who are enthusiastic and committed and dedicated to it. So enthusiasm about Krishna consciousness. Associate with those who are enthusiastic. It can be difficult in some situations. Association with devotees is essential. And devotees should be enthusiastic. Without enthusiasm, then it's... what is that? Then there's no life. But enthusiasm doesn't necessarily mean jumping 10 foot in the air saying, Jai! Enthusiasm is utsahan nischayan dharyat. It's also seen in steadiness. The enthusiasm to every day, rise early in the morning, chant your rounds. That's also a kind of sustained enthusiasm. Just have the commitment, have the commitment to do so. Once Srila Prabhupada was asked, what was that? How do we get determination? Srila Prabhupada said, follow the four regulated principles, chant 16 rounds. Then he was asked, well, what if we don't have the determination to follow the principles? Prabhupada said, then you're just an animal. Then you're useless. Because you vowed to follow this process. If you took a vow, you have to follow it. If you Srila Prabhupada said, a human can take a vow, an animal cannot. So if you take a vow and you don't follow it, then you're just like an animal. That was Srila Prabhupada saying, you're hopeless. Why does Krishna allow devotees who lie and violate most of the instructions of Bhagavad Gita to be authorities? Ask Krishna. Difficult one to answer. Well, it's a syndrome in any religious institution. That people who are interested in power tend to get power. And when you get power, you tend to want to hold on to it. And it may be that some people are very materially, some devotees, they're devotees, but they're very materially capable, but not so spiritually inclined, or the management overwhelms them, so they become more of a manager than a spiritual aspirant. So therefore, they should be the leader in Krishna consciousness means more than being a managerial leader. A leader is one who leads spiritually by rising early, following all the principles, simply to manage others. If you think I am managing others, then we don't have the mood of being a devotee, which is to be a servant. But it seems to be inevitable in a religious institution that there will be, in positions of authority, people who are not ideal. It's an inherent drawback of religious institutions. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave a talk which was made into an essay about how the forming of an organized church spells the end of actual religion, which is spontaneous. Anyway, it's a big topic. Why does Krishna allow it? Well, why does he allow anything? Why does he allow cows to be killed? People have desires to be fulfilled and they're given that opportunity. How long should a devotee be angry with another devotee? 3 minutes. What should I say? Be angry with another devotee. If at all you're going to be angry as long as it's needed, not anymore. As long as it is producing a beneficial effect. Akrodha paramananda nittanandarai abhimana shunya nitai nagare berai. Nityananda Prabhu is described as being without anger, but we find he is angry. If you find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's angry with who? At least two instances come to my mind immediately. Advaita Acharya, he's angry with him. Well, that's a joking kind of anger, isn't it? Shivananda Sen is one. He kicked him in the chest. Shivananda Sen working so hard, dedicatedly, serving the devotees, peaceful, doing everything for them, and he got the benediction of being kicked in the chest by Nityananda because he didn't do his job properly, according to Nityananda. But he took it like that. Great! Ah, I got kicked in the chest by Nityananda. Haribo! He was happy. Then who else? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu broke his danda. Yeah, but we don't find anger per se in there. Anyone? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ramachandra Khan, the inveterate offender of devotees. He offended Haridas Thakur. Then he offended Nityananda Prabhu. So he was angry. Akrodha paramananda Nityananda rai. Abhimana shunya nitai nagare bera. This is a big topic, but he was internally he didn't have that the sense of I, me and mine, which leads to material anger. But his anger is for the benefit of all. Even though in the case of Ramachandra Khan, it led to the whole village being devastated, showing the results of being offensive to a Vaishnava. So if at all we're going to be angry with another devotee, we should be angry for a purpose, controlled anger, and just as long as is required for the benefit of others. Srila Prabhupada, in Amsterdam, he was installing the deities and the national TV was there. Everything the devotees did was just all wrong, practically. And Prabhupada was shouting at them it was all live on TV. And Prabhupada didn't care. He was calling them, chastising them and everything. And then Prabhupada went, after he'd finished the whole ceremony, installed the deities. You don't expect that a deity installation, do you? But He went back and then he was just completely calm and joking and like that. He didn't maintain that anger. That was for their benefit. Okay. No more questions. Then chant Hare Krishna. Hand is tentatively going up. Hmm? You have a question? Yeah. Just a second.
First, I would like to thank you for great clarification in morning lecture on sense gratification topic. And the question goes like this: could you give us, please, some hints on how to deal with the challenges to change activities that degrade our bhakti and goes against our self-caring? You were mentioning to work on the job we don't like just to pay our bills, etc. Thank you.
Okay, but I don't see the thing. You're talking about how to get out of your job, or what are you talking about exactly?
I'm talking about
bad habits.
Yeah, and I mean, if you go to the job you don't like, you know, but you always
go to the job you don't like, but well, it may not just be an excuse, but it may be a necessity for maintaining your situation, your family situation.
But what if it's not good for your bhakti?
Not good for your spiritual life. Most jobs are not. Most devotees work in a situation which is not favorable for Krishna consciousness. If we're strong, we can radiate Krishna consciousness to others in our workplace. Yeah, we have to be strong. If we're going to survive in that difficult situation or that unconducive situation, then we have to be strong. We have to have strong sadhana. Strong commitment. Otherwise, very difficult. You can ask devotees who have survived in that situation. You yourself have, it seems, because you're not a newcomer. You're going on. Even with difficulty, if we keep on going, Krishna will appreciate that. That you just keep on going year after year after year. Krishna will appreciate. Tortoise and the hare. But at some point you have to retire, even materially. Then you can devote fully. We do see some devotees who have been devotees all their life, and in their old age they have a Netflix account. Do you know what that is? They have Netflix here? I guess it's everywhere, huh? I said that to one godbrother in England. I said, well, it is ridiculous. They've been devotees all their life. They have in their retirement they're watching movies, Kami movies. And he said that pretty much all the older devotees have Netflix accounts. As if it was some kind of justification. As Srila Prabhupada wrote in one letter, there are symptoms of missing the point. Well, at least if we think that I need to improve, that's a good start, because we can't overcome the problem unless we first of all recognize that we have a problem. Just like in psychology or psychiatry, it's difficult to treat patients, people who have psychological disorders, if they don't accept that they have a psychological disorder that needs addressing. It's much easier to help someone or to administer some kind of psychotherapy if they admit that I have a problem. If we don't admit that we have a problem, then it becomes much more difficult to treat it. So recognizing that I need to improve is a very good start. And we can always improve. Actually, you're coming so many years, you know the answer, but it's just a matter of doing it, isn't it? You know what needs, everyone needs, we know what needs to be done. We need to chant, we need to read, we need to follow strictly. We know what needs to be done, it's just a matter of getting the willpower to do it. Sanghe Shakti Kalo Yuge, in Kali Yuga we get strength from association. You said you had two questions? Okay, I'll take one. But there's only 3 minutes, so.
Okay, thank you.
One thing I didn't notice, but you're sitting in between two lady devotees, which isn't the best thing.
Okay, I'll.
This isn't Krishna West.
Okay.
Where men and women sitting next to each other is compulsory.
Okay, maybe we can. Is this better?
Yeah, hang off the edge of the seat.
Can I proceed?
Yeah, but you only have 1.5 minutes.
1.5. Well, maybe some other time then.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's two. We'll finish here. All right then. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Go Hari Premanande Hari Hari Bol.